There's lots of research that you and other people have been doing about the connections between poor health and poverty. Can you just give us a bit of an overview about what those connections are?
Generally, it's been known since the 1850s that people living under conditions of material and social deprivation show a variety of health, adverse health outcomes. And it's pretty well any known affliction, any known disease, any known behavioral, social problem is closely related to living in poverty and living under conditions of material and social deprivation. Now, while this has been known for such a long period of time, for whatever reason, the connection has not made it onto the health agenda. Certainly, health and health care and promoting health and reducing and preventing illness is a high priority for Canadians, but the obvious connection between poverty or material and social deprivation has not made it onto any kind of level of consciousness. And to make it even worse, the primary determinants of the extent of poverty within a country is public policy. And most Canadians are not well versed in various aspects of public policy. So if you think that the way to prevent poverty and to improve health is to enact public policy that supports the quality of living conditions, it outlines a whole variety of barriers to having this addressed. I think the most disturbing aspect for someone like me is that considering the concern that exists about preventing illness, promoting health, and the known fact that people in the healthcare community, in the public health community, in a variety of health settings actually knows the connection between poverty and health, the failure to raise this issue and to have the Canadian public become aware of it is especially disturbing.
Can you give us a couple specific examples of areas where poor people have very dramatic
Well,
increases in
I'll give you some
conditions?
areas where not only is the evidence really strong, but that the contrast between what's known and what's communicated to the public is disturbing. Cardiovascular disease, heart attack, stroke, and type 2 diabetes, which is the inability of the body to use the insulin that's available to process sugar. And when the body's unable to do that, you end up with what's called adult onset diabetes, and it leads to very bad outcomes. People know what the outcomes of heart disease are, but in the case of type 2 diabetes, you have amputations, you have blindness, you have kidney failure, you also have heart disease. Well, an extensive amount of evidence has arisen that indicates that children who live under conditions of deprivation, in other words, children that live in poverty, are especially prone to develop this, both these diseases, cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes, during adulthood. And these effects seem to be embedded, meaning that by the time you've been a child living in poverty, you carry this risk with you into adulthood, regardless of what happens to you in later life. And what it basically means is the worst situation to be in is living in poverty as a child, as an adolescent, as a young adult, and as an older adult. But even if, as a child, you live in poverty, where 15% of our children in Canada do, even if you were to transcend this and become not living in poverty, you still carry a significant degree of risk. Now, knowing this and knowing the concern there is about cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes and the human and economic cost to it, we would think that the people charged with preventing these diseases, whether they're ministries of health, whether they're the disease associations, whether they're the healthcare and public health communities would highlight this and would make some attempt to communicate to the public that a really good way of preventing cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes is to reduce child poverty. But they won't do it, and they don't do it. So when I give my presentations and talks, or when I teach this poverty and health course that has 200 students in it, students hear this for the first time. But also healthcare providers seem to hear it for the first time. So it's you have to wonder how seriously do these agencies and do governments take the prevention of disease and illness if they're unwilling to raise what the primary determinants of these diseases are and advocate or enact public policy that would serve to reduce it.
Do you have a hypothesis as to why that's the case?
Well, there's a variety of reasons that come together in the case of the North American situation. And these are not necessarily in order of importance. The first thing is that generally United States and Canada are what are called liberal political economies. And that is they give primary influence and dominance to the marketplace. So generally everything is concerned with growing the economy with rather less emphasis given to providing citizens with security. Now, luckily, we have some contrast to this, and it's not only the social democratic countries of Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Finland that intervene in the operation of the economy in order to provide citizens with basic security as well as a whole range of benefits that prevent poverty. But we also have the example of what are called the conservative welfare states in continental Europe of France, Germany, Belgium, and Holland that while they're certainly not socialists, do have this sense that we have to support our citizens. In North America, and it's not only, it's the UK as well and Ireland, in addition to Canada and the United States, there's less concern with that because the business sector tends to dominate public policy making. And when the business sector dominates, they tend to de-emphasize issues of fair taxation, social safety net, citizen security. The second component, which is tightly related to the dominance of the business community, is the emphasis on individualism. And that is, we're taught that everybody's responsible for their own behavior and their own future. So if you're poor, you brought it on yourself through poor lifestyle choices or a lack of motivation to succeed in school. So individualism is a powerful philosophy that attempts to explain both good outcomes and bad outcomes. So if everybody's responsible for their bad health outcomes, it diverts attention away from the important role that society and its public policies play. The third aspect of this is that in a very conservative political environment, and especially where these agencies, be they ministries, the hospitals, health units, diabetes associations, heart and stroke associations, they're either funded by governments that are implementing what we would call adverse public policy, but they're also dependent for fundraising on people who may not subscribe to the view that people that are poor and that are getting sick have not brought it on themselves, but are actually victims of the way the economic system is being operated. So when you combine conservative political environments, liberal political economies that generally tend not to support citizens, you combine that with the ideology of individualism that promulgated through the media and through schools and through ideology of newspapers, the media, and then you combine that with a reticence of the agencies charged with preventing illness and promoting health to raise these issues for a variety of reasons, you kind of have a perfect storm by which not only are the objective situation of people getting worse, but the explanation for all of this gets hyped up and ends up being emphasized the so-called healthy lifestyle choices. So the people that are victims are not only suffering material deprivation, but then they're being told that you brought this on yourself, and that's an explanation that the society promulgates to explain all these adverse health outcomes. So people that get heart attacks smoke, they're overweight, they don't exercise, when all of the objective research evidence indicates that these factors play a marginal role in these adverse health outcomes. And it's not only the big ones I've mentioned of cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. Poor children are twice as likely to have asthma, they're more likely to be injured, they're more likely to be in emergency rooms. Adults, working class adults, are twice as likely to get diabetes. I mentioned diabetes, but they're also twice as likely to get arthritis. They're twice as likely to have dementia, Alzheimer's, just about every disease. And then you include the mental health afflictions. Lower income, poor people are more likely to commit suicide. They're more likely to be depressed. Just about everything. But despite what we know about poverty and the material and social deprivation that causes all of these illnesses, the links between these is not being raised and not being communicated to the public in any systematic manner.
And obviously, there are certain things that we would think would lead to poor health for poor people, like inadequate nutrition, poor housing. Are there other things that systemically mean that poor people have poorer health?
Well, they all cluster together. There's income, there's housing, there's early childhood development. The schools tend to be more problematic in low-income areas. Communities are unsafe. People have perceive they have lack of control. People who are poor are less likely to be able to make sense out of what's happening. So it's actual material deprivation, and related to that is this lack of psychosocial control. But there's some other things that we just didn't mention that are related to be poor. In addition to income and food insecurity and bad housing, the jobs that low-income people take are more precarious, more insecure, have lack of control. So there's this whole clustering of disadvantage that's associated with being poor. The really distressing part of this is that the countries that do well on this not only do well in preventing poverty in the first place through wages and stronger unions, they also are the ones that provide supports to people in general. So what it means is that generally wage poverty is lower in the continental and Scandinavian countries, and these countries are more likely to provide child care, job training, housing. In countries such as Canada, not only is there a tremendous amount of wage-related poverty, but in addition to being poor, we don't go out of our way to provide you with child care. We don't go out of the way to make sure you have a place to live. We don't go out of the way to make sure that you're getting job training. So it leads to this spiral of adverse health outcomes that, again, not only are focused on health, but are focused to a whole range of educational and social outcomes, such as crime, such as lack of school achievement. So it's really not good, and the objective evidence coming from the United Ways, coming from the Health Council of Canada, coming from even the Conference Board of Canada, is that we're heading in the wrong direction, and it can't be good for any of us.
And what if we had a dramatic shift, and all of a sudden the provincial government put in a minimum wage that was tied to a living wage, and raised social assistance rates by 55%, which would put people back at real wages to pre-1995 cuts.
Things would be better.
What kind of impact would that have on people's health?
Well, it might have an immediate impact. Sometimes in my class, I show the incomes of the top 20% of the population. And, let's say it's around the average family in the top 20% has income of about $170,000. And the average income of the bottom 20% of families is about $15,000. If you transfer it through tax policy and progressive taxation, $10,000 from the people at the top, such that their average family income went from $170,000 to $160,000, there would be no health effects. But the health effects of the people getting $15,000 that would now be raised to $25,000 would be profound. There would be no need to go to food banks. There would be no need to get used clothing. And probably you begin to see an immediate turnaround in terms of mental health, sense of control, and probably within a relatively short period of time, we'd start to see improvements in health.
Great. Is there anything else you want to tell us today?
Ultimately, the solution is in the political realm, that ultimately parties that are receptive of these concepts have to be put into power. The other thing I would mention is we did produce a public primer on these broader issues, and it's called Social Determinants of Health, the Canadian Facts, and it's available for free on the internet. And if you simply type into Google Social Determinants of Health, the Canadian Facts, and it's been downloaded about 35,000 times so far. So it's a good introduction to all of these issues.
Great. Thank you very much.